My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Lacey Boggs hosts and produces a great podcast called Ace Stone Marketing Detective, a little bit different than your normal podcast on MPN. Lacey, tell us what these fine folks will get when they listen.
Ace Stone Marketing Detective is a fully scripted and produced fictional radio play that follows crack marketing detective Ace Stone as she bamboozles the bad guys and detects dastardly deeds in the marketing industry. The podcast is a funny, tongue-in-cheek look at content marketing, shady marketers, and suspicious marketing techniques online. And I think it's a fun new way to have a business podcast that proves that marketing can be playful and effective.
Where can people subscribe to this thing?
You can go to acemarketingdetective.com or find it in your favorite podcast player or go to the Marketing Podcast Network.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Daniel Pink.
So when we look at these four core regrets, they actually tell us a lot. And they tell us a lot about marketing, I think. And what they tell us is this, that when people reveal what they regret the most, they're revealing what they value the most. And so pretty consistently around the world, we have these regrets, and these regrets surface, I think, what people really want out of life.
Daniel H. Pink is the author of the New York Times bestsellers A Whole New Mind, Drive, To Sell as Human, Win, and his latest, The Power of Regret. His books have sold millions of copies, have been translated into 42 languages, and have won multiple awards. He and his family live in Washington, D.C., and he's my guest this week on the On Brand podcast. Daniel Pink, welcome to On Brand.
Nick Westergaard, thank you for welcoming me to On Brand.
Well, we're being very formal and official, so I have to start with as formal as I can think, which is you and I seem to have Instagrammed the same things in Denmark. And being so formal, your great picture on top of the round tower, I thought that looks familiar. It has to be. And I read and there it was. And you go back to, I was there in 16 or 17 and me on top of the round tower. But more importantly, the bathroom signage that you chose to capture that really captures the urgency of the moment well.
Yeah. No, I have this mild obsession with signage. I feel like that's maybe for your marketers out there, I feel like it is that signage is it's about compliance with rules and it's about wayfinding typically, but I feel like it could do a lot more than that, that it could show empathy, that it could be emotionally intelligent, that it could be whimsical, that it could bring a little momentary smile or joy to people's lives. And so, when I'm out and about, or as my Canadian friends say, out in a boot, I will often take pictures of these kinds of groovy signage and put it up. And so I happen to notice something in a hotel in Denmark. Actually, I have a lot of bathroom signage from Scandinavia, which might tell us something.
Well, they're very specific with it. But, at the risk of going really deep and overanalyzing the importance of signage, I also teach, in addition to marketing, communication here at the University of Iowa. And it's usually you have a very short sequence of words. So you have to choose wisely. I always joke to students, you know, show me who's got a sign that accurately tells people what to do at a roundabout, and there's extra credit, because I think the world, at least in America, remains baffled by roundabouts.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. But actually, I mean, you know, signs are actually, I think, no joking, I think people can learn a lot from signs, because for exactly the reasons of your suggestion, because it is, in some ways, as Ezra Pound once said about poetry, it's maximum efficiency of expression. And when we think about how do we convey our message, how do we convey this rule, how do we convey this path, this way, in incredibly brief number of letters and symbols, it's a great intellectual exercise. It's very good for communicators.
So I'm going to make the risk of moving away from signage, because I want to...
Oh, then I'll see you later. I'm done.
Right. You're done. You signed up only to talk about signage here for your time on the podcast. But I wanted to jump right into the power of regret, because, you know, I agree with the blurb on the back from Sanjay Gupta that notes, every time I read a Daniel Pink book, I walk away a better and more informed person. And so much so that I can even find things that I've learned in my routine each day, especially with when, because it's blisteringly hot in Iowa today. So I got up right away and got that morning exercise in, because I remember that you could do it either way, but I'm a first an early part of the day exerciser.
That's that's smart. I'm coming up against the, I am not an so again, for the two or three listeners who haven't read When, that's a book about the science of timing, and one of the things that I talk about, it, really just in a few paragraphs, but it's useful and helpful to me personally, is when in the day should we exercise? And the answer to that question is, it depends. That morning exercise is good for some things. It's good for habit formation. It's good for weight loss, actually. It's good for some kinds of strength training. Late afternoon, early evening exercise is good for other things. It's actually more enjoyable for people. You're less likely to be injured. And certainly with things involving speed, it is there's a performance enhancement. So I cannot stand exercising in the morning. I am a late afternoon, early evening exerciser. But today I'm coming up against it, because in Iowa, when it is blisteringly hot, the corn kernels start popping on their own in the field. And here in Washington, D.C., when it's blisteringly hot, the lobbyists' heads start popping on their own on K Street. So that's where we are today. It's blisteringly hot here in the nation's capital.
Well, yeah, and so you have to go early. The other thing that why that fits for me,
but That's the thing. I'm facing it, because I'm actually, because I have like meetings and calls and things like that all the way up until like 5:30, and so I actually I'm not joking around. I just said to my wife, it's like, oh my God, it's like, because we were gonna play tennis at like 6, but it's so freaking hot that I'm not sure we could be able to deal with it.
Well, see, it's the meetings, calls. I also have 5 kids. So if I get up and get the exercise out of the way, there's less of a chance that I'm going to have to run someone somewhere, that I'm going to lose my window.
Right, so, right. And while you're running on your treadmill, you can reaffirm your commitment to not having a 6th kid.
Exactly. Well, I again, that was some of those great nuggets from Win, which I loved. Love all of your books. I'm curious if anybody else that you've encountered has had this reaction to The Power of Regret, because I love all of your books. They're practical, tactical, thoughtful, and I saw a new one was coming, and I'm like, great. And I saw Power of Regret, and I'm like, ooh, no, I'm a little hesitant. So much so, I'm a book person. I asked you for your favorite book in our sound check beforehand. I saw it sitting in the store window. I had to have it. I bought it, and then I brought it home, and I looked at it for about a month, because it's that fear of looking back, of regret, I guess. And you know, dug into it and ended up loving the system, the approach, the use of regret, but I was afraid of it. Am I alone there?
You are so not alone. One of the things that I'm trying to do in this book is really change people's minds and go after a very deeply held belief, which is that regret is something to be scared of. It's something to be avoided, that we should never look backward, that we should always be positive, and that a well-lived life is a life where we don't think about our regrets. And so what you're seeing, perhaps to the dismay of my publisher, is my attempt to try to change minds. Rather than, you know, it's easier to, you know, it's much easier to write books the most commercially successful book you can do is to write books that confirm people's existing beliefs in ways that make them think they're clever. And so what I wanted to do was actually challenge people's existing beliefs. And I did that by putting that R word, regret, not only in the title, but in giant capital letters at the center of the cover. So you would see it in the bookstore and say, oh, my God, what the hell? And hope that you pick it up and hope that by, you know, for I get generous people like you to pick up the book, that once they read it, their minds begin to change.
Well, and I have to say also another sign adjacent is a book cover, because I believe, if I'm not remembering this incorrectly, that you shared some of the different covers that almost were. But I think it's another great example of what we were talking about of you know, the maximum efficiency of.
Yeah.
Of expression, because there's that wadded up piece of paper, and I've got them on my desk right now as we speak, as many of us do. Those have to be some of the closest symbols of regret that are surrounding us. How did you know that was the, because there were other icons as I recall as well, right?
Yeah, but this is in some ways a branding question. I mean, not in some ways, it's in many ways. Seriously, a branding question. And it's very difficult, you know, it's very difficult to do. The one way that I think of it truly is when I haven't done it very successfully in any of my books, because this is not something I'm particularly good at. And so I try to rely on people with far more talent and creativity than I do to try to come up with it, even though it's very, very hard. But my starting point truly in many cases is sort of thinking, what is the Nike swoosh for this body of ideas? What is the single visual representation when people look at that icon, they look at that image, they immediately associate it with the set of ideas that I'm trying to advance in this book? And also the other side of it, which is that when people think of this book, what is this set of ideas, what is the image they conjure? And for something like regret, which is inherently abstract, it's difficult. And we experimented with a number of different looks, and I even, something I've never done before, is actually tested with my newsletter readers, not a super sophisticated test, but with my newsletter readers, trying to see which cover spoke to them the most. And it took a while. We came up with what I think is actually a really good visual symbol of regret, which is the wadded up piece of paper. And I think of all my books, I think it's the best visual representation of the set of ideas that we've come up with.
On Brand, we'll be right back after this.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Lacey Boggs hosts and produces a great podcast called Ace Stone Marketing Detective, a little bit different than your normal podcast on MPN. Lacey, tell us what these fine folks will get when they listen.
Ace Stone Marketing Detective is a fully scripted and produced fictional radio play that follows crack marketing detective Ace Stone as she bamboozles the bad guys and detects dastardly deeds in the marketing industry. The podcast is a funny, tongue-in-cheek look at content marketing, shady marketers, and suspicious marketing techniques online. And I think it's a fun new way to have a business podcast that proves that marketing can be playful and effective.
Where can people subscribe to this thing?
You can go to acemarketingdetective.com or find it in your favorite podcast player or go to the Marketing Podcast Network.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Now, back to the show. So, I love that you noted earlier that for those that haven't read, and before I dive super deep into the content, because I have some specific questions that I want to get to. Say we're in an elevator for the two or three that haven't read the book. What's the capsule summary for a elevator ride of somewhat realistic length?
Oh, okay. The Power of Regret is about our most misunderstood emotion, regret. And what we know about regret is that everybody has it. Regret makes us human. Every single person has regret. But if we treat it right, regret can make us better. It can be an important engine for learning, growing, and clarifying our values. And this book shows you how to do that.
Well done. That could go on the flap, or maybe it is. And I've just been played. But what I thought,
it's not on the flap. The flap is way wordier than that.
we won't get into.
That's why they call it the flap. It just flaps.
Yeah, just flaps. I loved also not to back up, but when you were talking about the cover, it almost seems like you could do that Nike swoosh question. That we should do that more often with sets of ideas if we want to bring it all the way back full circle to the bathroom sign. But if we want to communicate ideas simply and effectively of asking that question of what the icon is that goes with this. And I think sometimes we kind of put the Nike swoosh up on its rightful pedestal. But we could bring it down and use that as a tool in our day-to-day work selling ideas, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, I try to do that. It's for me at least, Nick, it's very difficult. This is sort of the reverse of most of my life where I have the answer but I have no idea what the question is. whereas in this case, I think it's the right question to ask in pursuing the sorts of things that I do and that, you know, that you do and others listening here do. What is the Nike swoosh for this set of ideas? I think that's the right question. I've always had a very, very difficult time answering that question.
Yeah, well, it's very much, it is with a question like that, it is very much dependent on the inputs and the source of those inputs as well. So, where it's coming from. I love the story on the newsletter readers. That must have been where I saw that as well. I can't remember which one I voted for. So all of this comes down to kind of thinking about consumer behavior. And as I was reading The Power of Regret, I wondered if there's an overlay to this thinking in consumers in regret and what might be useful for marketers to know.
Sure. I think there's a lot in regret that marketers can learn from. I mean, a number of different dimensions. So, you know, I'll give you so many different things on this. So I'll give you one big one and then some tactical things. So one of the things I did for this book is I collected regrets from around the world. We have a database now, it's amazing, of 21,000 regrets from people in 109 countries. And what I found is that around the world, people seem to have the same four core regrets. They have regrets. They have what I call foundation regrets, which are, if only I'd done the work. These are regrets about small decisions early in life, finance, health, education, that accumulate to bad outcomes later in life. There are boldness regrets, which are, if only I'd taken the chance. These are people who, huge numbers of people who, if only I'd started a business, if only I'd asked that person out on a date, if only I'd traveled, if only I'd spoken up. So people who decided to play it safe rather than take the chance and now regret it. There are moral regrets, if only I'd done the right thing. Again, you're at a juncture. In this case, you can do the right thing, you can do the wrong thing. When people do the wrong thing, you know, not everybody, but most everybody regrets it. And then finally are what I call connection regrets, which are, if only I'd reached out. And these are about relationships that have come apart and nobody wants to do anything. And so they fester and they drift apart even further. And so so when we look at these four core regrets, they actually tell us a lot. And they tell us a lot about marketing, I think. And what they tell us is this, that when people reveal what they regret the most, they're revealing what they value the most. Okay, so let me say that again. When people tell you what they regret the most, they're also telling you what they value the most. And so pretty consistently around the world, we have these regrets. And these regrets surface, I think, what people really want out of life. So foundation regrets are about the need for stability. A good life has some, is not wobbly. Boldness regrets, I think, are about growth and learning, because we don't want to waste our time here on the planet. We want to do better and learn and grow. Moral regrets are about fundamental goodness. I think most of us want to be good. And connection regrets are about love. And so when we think about that, we actually have a pretty good window into what people actually want out of their lives. And I think marketers could use that. Like, what do people want out of their lives? They want some stability. They want to be able to learn and grow. They want to be good and be seen as good. And they want love. And if marketers understand those fundamental needs, I think that actually helps us eradicate some other, you know, sort of at least sharpen our view and focus our attention in our marketing efforts.
That is so important, I think, the idea of regret and kind of the other side of that is value. That's great information.
Well, one of the things that regret does, and it's very important to understand, which is why I don't want people to run away when they see the book in the bookstore, because one of the things that, you know, one of the things that regret does is that regret clarifies what we value and instructs us on how to do better. So when you or I or anybody has a regret, think about this. Let me put it another way. You and I and everybody listening to this has made all kinds of decisions today and last week and last month and last year, and most of them we don't even remember. But there are a few decisions or indecisions that we make in our life that stick with us for a week, a month, a year, 5 years, 10 years. And so if I have regrets, say, about not being kind enough when I was younger, and that regret has stuck around for 30 years, that's telling me something, okay? You can't just dismiss that. That's actually telling, that's a big signal that you're getting. And it's a signal that says, hey, Dan, you value kindness more than you might realize. And it's also instructing me on how to do better in the rest of my life. And so, you know, regret is very revealing. And it's revealing for all of us because it charts a path to a life well lived. But for marketers, it gives us a window into the human psyche. What makes people tick and what do they ultimately want out of life? And knowing that, or at least having a good hypothesis about that, is essential for marketers.
You know, it makes me think all of this is top of mind for a lot of different reasons. You shared a quote yesterday that I hadn't heard before that I wanted to make sure that I could mention as well. It was from Sig Barsad on emotions aren't noise, they're data. And yeah. And I think that point illustrates that kind of perfectly.
Well, this is pretty fundamental to the book, as you know. You know, so. You know, when we think about regret, the conventional view is that we should ignore our regrets. We should that we should always be positive, never be negative, always look forward, never look back. And I think that's a colossally bad idea. I think the overwhelming preponderance of evidence is that that leads to delusion. But what's more, though, if you wallow in your regrets, if you ruminate on your regrets, if you stew on your regrets, that's bad, too. What we want to do is we want to think about our regrets. We want to use our regrets exactly that way, as signals, as data, as information. And when we take that approach to our regrets, we can enlist them for a whole array of benefits. Again, we have science on this. We have a lot of evidence on this. We have evidence showing that it can help us become better negotiators. It can help us become better problem solvers. It can help us become better strategists. It can help us avoid cognitive biases. And I think this is more broadly true about negative emotions. You know, we shouldn't ignore our negative emotions. We shouldn't wallow in our negative emotions. We should listen to them because they're telling us something. And regret, which is our most common negative emotion, is telling us something profoundly important. It's helping us clarify what matters to us, and it's actually teaching us on how to do better going forward.
You know, you talked about the conventional take on regret, and I think something else that we have a conventional take on is the role of story, and we talk about that a lot here on the podcast, but I love that what you detail in the book, talking about the roles in a story of and how that plays into regret, of being the creator of a story versus a character in a story. How does that play out?
Well, I think this is actually a pretty fundamental notion about our lives. Let me give you the genesis of this. There's some work by a personality psychologist at Northwestern named Dan McAdams. Dan McAdams has a theory that personality is formed through narrative, that when we sort of define ourselves and assess who we are, we do it in narrative terms. And he says that there are two reigning narratives. One is what he calls a redemption narrative, and one is what he calls a contamination narrative. A contamination narrative is when things go from good to bad, okay? And a redemption narrative is when things go from bad to good. And I think that regret offers a redemption narrative, that we can take this thing that is unpleasant and bad and enlist it to do better and be good. But what he's saying is that psychologically healthy lives look at the people who are psychologically healthy, who flourish, see their own narratives as a redemption narrative, as going from bad, is getting better in some way now. This is a long-winded way of getting to your actual question, which is, if we see our lives in narrative terms, we have to ask ourselves, are we the author of that narrative or are we the actor? And the answer is yes, we are both. And I think that helps us get our mind around a lot of life's conundrums. So are we the author of our own narrative? Yes, we have volition. We have agency. We have the power to shape our course. But we don't have full authority, full agency, the full capacity, because we are living in context. We live in an environment. There is circumstance and fortune and luck and all those kinds of things. And so in that sense, in some ways, we are the actor, that we're not fully writing the script. And so when we think about this, it's like, are we the author of that narrative? Yes, but not fully. Are we the actor in that narrative? Yes, but not fully. And I think that part of a life well lived is trying to tease out where we are the author and where we are the actor, where we have agency and where we are just the product of circumstance. And I think that's a profoundly important question. And it's not something that has a single answer. I think it is in some ways the quest of living, is constantly asking ourselves that question and trying to make sense of it.
Well, that's a great question, and definitely here's to a life well lived. I'm going to tee you up a little bit here because we're close to the brand that has made you smile. But I'm going to first mention that something about the power of regret that made me smile. Two things, actually. First, I did, as I noted, got over my fear and read the book, but I listened to the audiobook. So I'd put in a quick plug. We're here on a podcast, so it seems fitting, but it is. I love when someone does something a little bit different with an audiobook, but you have these real regrets. And in addition to you reading the audiobook, the regrets are performed by actors, I would assume.
That's right.
And it's a great listen. So that and Thanks. my And my other smile from the book, you were just highlighting work from Northwestern, some colleagues from the University of Iowa, Bill Hedgecock, who's now at Minnesota, oh, yeah. used to be in the marketing department here at Iowa, and Andrea Lewengraff and Raylan Webster. So just a big Hawkeye or Iowa thank you, whatever we're going
sure
with
thing.
For the
yeah,
label
yeah,
there.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm the product of the Big Ten. I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, in the shadow of the Ohio State University, and went to Northwestern. So
we can be topical and say the potentially ever expanding Big Ten.
Well, now the Big Ten is basically half of all powerful right. college football teams, stretching from New Brunswick, New Jersey, all the way to Southern California. But that's another story for another day.
It is. It is. And we can dodge it no longer, and you may regret it, but what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
You know, I was thinking about that, and it's a strange one, but The Economist magazine has made me smile for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think that their covers always, I think, are super clever and a great way to convey information visually. But they also have this great slogan that I saw. It's not new, but I saw it again recently when I was traveling, and it says, "Great minds like a think." And I thought that was very clever, and it did literally make me smile when I saw it. So three cheers for The Economist.
That is great. And again, I think that there's elements of our conversation threaded in there all the way back to the signage. Where can folks go to learn more about all things pink?
You can go to my website, which is danpink.com. You can subscribe to my newsletter. That's a pretty good way to find out what I'm doing.
I love the newsletters. I feel like I'm supplementing everything with additional plugs and information. But the Pink Casts are longtime listener, I guess, first time conversationalist here. But we will link up to all of that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Dan, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
On Brand is part of the Marketing Podcast Network. If you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, you can always listen free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your favorite platform may be. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Lacey Boggs hosts and produces a great podcast called Ace Stone Marketing Detective, a little bit different than your normal podcast on MPN. Lacey, tell us what these fine folks will get when they listen.
Ace Stone Marketing Detective is a fully scripted and produced fictional radio play that follows crack marketing detective Ace Stone as she bamboozles the bad guys and detects dastardly deeds in the marketing industry. The podcast is a funny, tongue-in-cheek look at content marketing, shady marketers, and suspicious marketing techniques online. And I think it's a fun new way to have a business podcast that proves that marketing can be playful and effective.
Where can people subscribe to this thing?
You can go to acemarketingdetective.com or find it in your favorite podcast player or go to the Marketing Podcast Network.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.